Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to our, now I think this is the fourth episode we've done of these new examples of old fallacies.
There you go.
When I first thought we'd do this, I thought we'd probably get through quite a lot, and these would go quick, but they seem to be tangent engines to a certain extent.
Maybe they're just kind of reminding us of other examples where we just think, oh yeah, no, I came across that.
Yeah,
and blah, 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 blah. You know, notwithstanding, yeah, massive tangential.
So
things,
I wasn't really expecting to get so many episodes of this thing, but hopefully you're enjoying them as much as we are, because I think it's good to look back on some of the ones we've done, because these are ones that we're never going to get to through our normal process of revisiting older fallacies every 5 years.
In the universe.
So it's a good
sun
excuse
swallows us up
to clear out the things that I've come across since we recorded them. And thought, that's a good example. I wish I'd known about that when we recorded that episode.
And which will continue to happen.
It absolutely will. So in the future, I'll gather more of these, I'm sure. And this will be a thing we revisit at a later date.
Every 7 years, maybe?
Probably less than that.
Now that we've...
Also that it gives us a bit of a break from watching films made by Dinesh D'Souza.
There is that. Or it gives him enough time to come up with a new one.
Yeah, yeah. There is a Jordan Peterson video that I kind of have my eye on us talking about.
Is there?
And to some extent, the more we do of these puts that off a bit. So. So I'm with that.
Let's do fewer per episode of these, and then we can hold that off.
We have incidentally, because a few episodes ago we did ask what people thought we should revisit, because currently we finished the film we were doing, we finished the book we were looking at, and so this is kind of stuff we're doing in between. The examples that we had, thanks very much, They tended to be things that were kind of already comedy and on our side. So they were already mocking Republicans, which I think is great and enjoyable to watch, but I don't know how much scope it gives us to talk about it.
Well, because we did come across that before. We were kind of thinking, why don't we look at left-wing stuff? And maybe it's because we just agree the fuck out of it.
We would just be quietly sitting here going... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's, we did kind of consider whether it would be possible to take apart, you know, I don't know, some of the Midas touch stuff, but it's not based in fact. So that's so when you go to fact check stuff, you just go, oh yeah, well they got that right. So rather than it being outrageously out there and the, you know, and huge amounts of fallacies being employed and a whole bunch of lies being said, which, and in such a way that it's very persuasive, and they don't acknowledge that they're doing it.
Yeah.
On the right, whereas on the left, it seems to be the left is at great pains to detach themselves from that it is just their opinion and base as much as they can into backing out factually with data and objectivity. Whereas the right don't bother with that.
Yeah. It's actually something I'm quite conflicted about, because I do think there is value in acknowledging that our side makes mistakes and commits fallacies as well. Mm-hmm. I do think that's important.
Our side,
yeah, well, it is.
Yeah.
Let's not mess about. We are progressive liberals. We're not. We haven't hidden that. Or if we have, we've done it very poorly.
Yes, yeah. We have actually, we did take a test and we're up there in the 90s.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which is all
our
of it,
team,
basically.
I think it's fair to say that people, just generally as a critical thinker, it is responsible to recognize that you, yourself, people who agree with you also make errors in critical thinking.
Yeah.
You are subject to fallacies. You fall for things, and you accept opinions that you already believe in much more easily than you do things you disagree with. You subject them to less critical exploration and all of that kind of stuff. I think it's a really important aspect. But at the same time, when we are in a world where people on the left are fighting for the rights of oppressed people.
Mm. Yeah.
Of women, of LGBTQIA people, of immigrants, of people who are genuinely having their rights taken away.
Palestinians. Yeah.
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 When that's what the left is doing, and the right is actively trying to take those people's rights away and using lies and obfuscation and bad arguments and so on to do it.
Yeah.
I think adding any focus to mistakes the left are making when they are arguing for humanity and decency isn't a responsible thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's where the focus needs to be.
Yes.
So while I accept that we're not perfect, and that people who we agree with and politicians we agree with and politicians who are on the left are not perfect, putting any time into pointing out their errors not what's helpful right now.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what happens on the left certainly in the Labour Party, whenever Labour gets in power. And we'll do something. It's that time-honored phrase. They never wants to waste a good crisis. That Labour will always start stabbing each other in the back.
Absolutely, the left is much better at already arguing with itself.
Yes,
over very minor differences of exactly how we should help disadvantaged people.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. It comes down to the Judean People's Front on It's that,
So I don't want. I don't feel. I don't feel any benefit from adding to that discourse.
Yes. Yes.
I feel, and again, I'm not trying to be disingenuous about it. I'm not saying that there aren't mistakes made, or that there are things that the left could be doing better. That's fair. I think that's a reasonable thing to be. To focus on to some extent, is to say, what could we be doing better?
Yeah.
But focusing on that over the absolutely egregious lack of humanity and everything on the right is I think the wrong thing to be putting your energy into.
Yes. It could be termed as self-destructive. Yes.
Yeah.
Given that we talk about us on the left, and then therefore we are the self that would be being destroyed.
And I think also, acknowledging that this is, I'm sure, part of my confirmation bias, but I think it's true to a large extent, is that we are far better at policing when people genuinely do bad things on the left.
Yeah.
When people yeah. commit crimes, you know, look at Senator Menendez or people like that, or Cuomo, yeah. Andrew Cuomo, who
yeah.
who just quite recently, the last few months, has left the New York mayor's race
yes.
Because he didn't have the support
yeah.
of the left. He conceded the primary because there wasn't the support, because he's a predator and
yeah.
he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we, even though he went into that primary as the front runner, and obviously you want the Democrat to be a strong Democrat who can beat the Republican going into that race. I think the Republican going into the race is Curtis Sliwa of of the former, what are they?
Vigilante
group
yes.
from the 80s.
The Guardian Angels.
That's it, the Guardian
Curtis
Angels.
Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa. I haven't heard Sliwa, that yeah. name for yeah. ages. Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
You want someone who's definitely going to beat them. And Cuomo yeah. at least had the name recognition that
yeah.
you would think, okay, yeah, well, he's obviously going to beat the Republican. And yeah. it's New York. Realistically, the Democrats probably going to win. But you don't want to go into that race with a question mark.
Yeah.
And yet, Democrats didn't support Cuomo because he's not a good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
that you know, I think we do that. We got rid of Al Franken even. Or Al Franken was kind of expected to resign because of really arguably a kind of an overblown scandal from stuff he did when he was a comedian and not a politician.
Right.
But because it was a bit consent related,
right.
he resigned from the Senate. And we are better at that.
Yeah.
When
yeah,
stuff yeah, yeah. happens on the left,
yeah.
where people cross a line, we're better yeah. at saying, well, fuck that dude then.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
yeah. We're not going to just support them because they're a Democrat.
Yeah.
Whereas the Republicans.
Or a convicted felon on 34 counts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. And yeah. even when they do disavow someone, it takes such a lot. I mean, look at how much George Santos got away with before
yeah,
eventually
yeah.
some Republicans went, you know, I'm not sure this is a good guy.
Yeah. 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 And even then people say, well, what do you mean? What do you mean that you don't think this? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of tangents.
yeah, yeah.
This is why we haven't got through as many of these as I expected.
I don't know what you're talking about. yeah.
So the first fallacy that we want to talk about this time is red baiting, which was episode 107.
Yeah.
And it is about leaping to calling someone a communist, basically, or
right.
or a pinko or a socialist or a Marxist or whatever.
Yeah.
When you disagree with their argument. And using that pre-existing dislike of communism
yeah.
among many groups, just using that as an attack because the thing they're saying is something you disagree with or you don't like. And the example is from an episode of Young Sheldon,
mm.
when Sheldon, the company that made the bread that Sheldon had in his PB&J sandwiches changed
yeah.
their manufacturing process. In fact, they were taken over by a different company who then kind of changed their processes basically to save money. He disagreed with it. He started a petition and then got interviewed on the news about his stance on this issue.
Yeah.
I was shocked to learn that the Happy Hearth Home Bakeries had been bought out by the Domestic Food Corporation, and they started making their bread faster and cheaper.
And you don't like that, do you?
No.
And you're collecting signatures to make them stop.
I am. Corporations shouldn't be allowed to make these decisions on their own.
Well, who should?
The people who eat the bread. This wouldn't happen if there were centralized control over all these big corporations.
Are you suggesting a communist form of government in Texas?
I suppose I am.
Hang on a sec.
There you have it. Local boy Sheldon Cooper says communism is what Texas needs.
So they've largely moved away from the bread angle on the news there.
Yeah.
And focused yeah. very much on a 10-year-old, admittedly precocious 10-year-old's understanding of communism when they were like saying, you know, the the centralized control you're suggesting that these that should stop bread companies from doing thing. Essentially, he's talking about regulation. He's talking about stopping from stopping companies from doing things that would be not beneficial to their, in this case, customers. But in many cases, when the writer is talking about it, it's about, you know, protecting the workers and things like that.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's regulation is essentially, from this reporter's perspective, communism. and therefore he is advocating in saying, I don't like the bread now.
Yeah.
He's saying we should have communism in Texas.
The whole, it feels very Simpsons like.
Yeah. And the rest of this episode is basically attacked by the local populace for being a pinko commie. For disagreeing with the you know, good American bread that he's being forced to eat. So
brilliant.
Yeah. It's a shortcut to disagree. It's kind of the political opposite of the reductio ad Hitlerum thing.
Yes.
The kind of reductio ad Stalin.
Yeah.
So yeah.
yeah.
So the next fallacy is the gambler's fallacy, episode 111. And this is of the two very related ones we did on consecutive episodes, gambler's fallacy and the hot hand fallacy.
Yeah.
Hot hand one is when a thing has been happening for a while and therefore you think it will continue to happen.
Yeah.
The gambler's fallacy is where a thing hasn't happened for a while and therefore you think it's due.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an independent event that isn't affected by history, but somehow we still have this very strong feeling that because it hasn't happened for a bit, it's bound to happen soon. And somehow it increases the chances that it's going to happen. That's the key, really.
It's the entire thing that drives the entirety of the support for the England football team.
Very much so, yeah. We haven't won since 1966. Any minute now.
This will be it. Yeah.
So we have a few examples for this. The first one is from it's actually from an episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Aha.
But this clip doesn't feature any of the characters from Star Trek Strange New Worlds because this was a crossover episode they had with Star Trek Lower Decks.
Oh, right.
So this is the animated version of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And there was they went through a kind of portal thing and went into the non-animated world in...
Oh,
it was quite a good episode.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
this is from the opening.
Yeah.
Ensign's log. Stardate 58460.1. The Cerritos has just entered the orbit of Krolmuth B, home of the Krolmuth B portal. One of my all-time favorite portals. We're taking routine portal readings and making sure the portal area is free of any portal problems.
Stop! How are you so excited for some random portal nobody's ever heard of?
History buffs have. It was discovered by Captain Pike and the original crew of the Enterprise. I mean, the second Enterprise, but technically...
Yeah, okay. It's going to be like every other portal, and we're just running scans.
Because it might do something.
Which it hasn't in 120 years.
Yeah, it's due.
So yeah, Boimler thinks that because nothing's happened, this has been a completely boring portal.
Yeah,
ever since it was discovered, nothing has happened, and so he's like, yeah, and it could happen any moment. It's due now; something is due to happen. Of course, it does. Something does happen. So you know, his fallacious reasoning is actually borne out as accurate as is often the case with comedic uses of fallacies, as it turns out to actually be a valid, well, it's still not valid logic, even though he turns out to be correct that his reasoning to get there is wrong. So because nothing has happened with the portal in a way, Mariner's suggestion that because nothing has happened with it for 150 years, nothing will continue to happen.
Right.
Could possibly be seen as a hot hand fallacy. I think that's probably more valid. If a thing hasn't done something anomalous ever, I think it is probably quite reasonable to assume it will continue not to be anomalous.
Right.
It's not impossible that an anomaly will happen, but its standard state of doing nothing will probably continue.
Probably continue rather than increase the likelihood of something, an anomaly
It's occurring. Quite unlikely that the stapler on your desk will become sentient. If it hasn't happened up to now.
Yeah.
I think you can reasonably assume it will continue to not be sentient.
I've got a shed full of infinite monkeys that still haven't churned out Hamlet. Yeah.
Yeah. They do the art of the deal every couple of weeks, though, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the names get changed to protect the innocent.
Yeah. Our next example is from Westworld. And as usual on Westworld, things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
Every time your team rolls out an update, there's a possibility of a critical failure.
We don't update the host in cold storage, and the park hasn't had a critical failure in over 30 years.
Meaning we're overdue.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it means. Yeah. Because that's the whole thing that happens in Jurassic Park. As soon as Richard Attenborough mentions the fact that it's all terribly safe and it's all looked after by Unix servers, so nothing can go wrong, things go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Jeffrey Wright character is just, he's pointing out that actually they're reasonably good at what they do. You know, this has been going for a long time, this park.
Mm-hmm.
It's not new. It's not, you know, been rushed through to get visitors in.
Like Jurassic Park. Yeah.
They've been actually running it for quite a long time, and it's been fine.
And again, the updates happen overnight.
And they're talking about an anomaly that's happened with a host that is in storage. And he's saying we don't update the host in storage. So there's no particular reason why our updates would have led to this problem.
And again,
we've got that hot hand thing of saying, yeah, we've been doing this. We've been running this thing. It's been fine all this time. It will continue to be fine. And she's pointing out that, it's been fine for all this time. And therefore, because it's been fine for 30 years, we're overdue for something to go catastrophically wrong.
Because I think, and of course it will, and because that's in the plot. I think what he is actually saying is we take just as much care with each and every update as we have done in the past.
Yes.
We're not lackadaisical about the fact that it's nothing's gone wrong, so therefore we're not doing any checks. We still check as though it's the first time we've done it, and we know that. And she's implying that they don't do that.
Yeah.
And I'd said, well, just because you checked it every single time means we're due a big one.
And of course, there are things that might not be considered. You know, they might not have thought of everything, which is often the case with these, especially with Michael Wright and stuff. You know, with Jurassic Park, no one factored in the fact that Dennis Nedry was going to be trying
thieving
to steal
things
and
and
leaving gates open and
messing
with the servers and that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's flies in the ointment that they may not have anticipated.
Yeah. Except every time you watch a movie, that's what happens.
I've
realised last time
it'd be a pretty boring story.
Yeah.
If Westworld was just about a park where everyone having a lovely time.
Except it would be quite, It's like last time I watched 2001 Space Odyssey, which was recently screened at the British Film Institute as part of the same festival that screened the original print of Star Wars from 1977. But I didn't get to see it there, but I saw it again. And the thing that annoyed me this time about 2001 is that Hal intervenes, that it all goes wrong. You want the mission to succeed. You want to find out where the what was the source of the obelisk. What they call? What did they call them? The big black.
Isn't it an obelisk?
No, they don't call it an obelisk. What do they call it? That thing. Anyway, that. But it gets interrupted because Hal goes crazy. But I also realise that he goes crazy because of the influence of the... not obelisk. What's it called? Monolith.
Monolith.
Monolith. That's it. The monolith. I was getting two asterisks of gold. Obelisk. Yeah, so there is I guess that's the gambler's fallacy always gets played out in disaster movies, as in real life, looking at you, Titanic, that everybody says it will be fine.
Yeah.
And that's the opening bit for all of those disaster movies we watched in the 70s. That, you know, the building that was unburndownable and the ship that was unsinkable and the town that was earthquake proof. You go in there and you go,
I think that's not so much the gambler's fallacy. It's the gambler's fallacy if they say it hasn't happened for all this long and all this time and therefore it's due to happen and then it does happen. I think it's hubris when people are saying, "Oh, I've designed this in a way that means the bad thing can't possibly happen," and then it happens.
Yeah, and then it happens.
And obviously, it inevitably happens if it's because it's one of those types of films.
Yeah, but, sharks normally survive. Yeah,
as I think is very pertinent to the current situation in the world. Disaster movies, usually the beginning is someone not listening to a scientist.
Yes, exactly.
The scientists going, if we don't do something about this, this terrible thing is going to happen. And then a rich person goes, it'll be fine.
Yeah, or we needn't do anything about this because there's no chance of any of the thing that you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So. Well, just make the dossier say that. Well, that's not really how science works. No, but it's how... Power
money
and ego
works.
And fragile self-esteem. That's how that works.
So finally, in this for this fallacy, a kind of reality show. This is Outback Version Truckers from.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is a trucker driving across Australia. They drive across huge distances in this show.
It's a big place, Australia.
In giant trucks.
Yeah.
And inevitably get punctures and have to deal with punctures. I discovered when I started using my bike regularly, this is many years ago, I don't bike now. It's far too much hard work. But when I did
it's
it
very
regularly.
Flat where you
for
live,
bit,
though.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, just fuck it. I'm not going to do it. But for a while, for like years ago when I was younger and fitter, I used to ride like 10 miles a day. And and it turns out when you do that amount of riding, you get flat tires all the time and it's really annoying.
Yeah,
and there's not much you can do about it. And at first I was like, what, this is ridiculous. How am I getting so many flat tires? And I went to a like bike shop and was like, you know, what can I do about this? And they were like, how much do you ride? And that's completely normal.
It's gonna happen.
It's really bad. I just don't say fuck that. I'm not doing that anymore. It's really annoying.
Except before the days of Kevlar tires.
Yeah, it was they were just coming in. They were really expensive, but you could just buy it. You could just start to get them. Yeah. Anyway, it's a thing with truckers driving across the desert as well, apparently. Yeah. The kind of unpaved roads of the outback are an absolute minefield, metaphorically speaking, for truck tires.
Yeah.
And so it's just a inevitable thing. And one of the people that was featured on Outback Truckers was this pretty old trucker who had to deal with this problem.
In the heat of the tropical north, 66-year-old trucking veteran Jeff Fullwood is racing the clock, changing a flat tire.
I usually only average about one flat tire a trip, but I think last trip I didn't have any, so it looks like we're going to have two this trip.
Because that's how it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
They get carried forward. Yeah.
So I don't know if he was serious in that, whether he genuinely thought that that's how it worked or he was just being a bit flippant for the camera. But that's not how that works because they're not dependent events. It doesn't, the tires don't, the road doesn't know that you didn't have a flat
didn't
last
have one
time.
Last time. And so it owes you one.
Yeah.
So you've got to add that to the credit column.
The tally.
Yes.
And it is true that, and this is why this is such a compelling bias. It is true that if over time, you average one puncture a trip.
Yeah.
When you don't have one, you will also inevitably have another trip where you have two.
in order to it, average
well,
it out.
That's how the average works. If your average is exactly one, then sometimes you'll have one, sometimes you'll have none, and sometimes you'll have two. And roughly, the number of zeros and twos will be about the same. Because otherwise, your average would not be one. That's all that is. What you're doing is you're saying that average number is the number you know after the fact.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing, is you're taking the result that you know after all of the events have happened and assuming that you can use that to predict future events.
Yeah, yeah. So, and actually, in a way, it's also a bit of a reification of the law of averages.
Yeah, yeah.
So I average one. So in order to fulfill that, in order to meet the demands of the average is going to meet out and
But it really does feel like that. If you flip a coin again and again and again, many, many times, you will have runs of tails and runs of heads and things like that. And if you are doing it and you have a run of like 20 tails, you absolutely feel like over time, and it is mathematically true that over time, if you do it enough, you will have enough heads, enough extra heads to balance those tails out. Not because of the tails, but just because if you have choose a big enough number, you'll get pretty close to 50%.
Yeah.
And because of that, when you're looking at from a perspective of just having had a lot of tails, it feels like that means you're going to get more heads in the future, but that's not how it works. But it really does feel like that.
Yeah, yeah. It becomes something outside of your control, so you give into it, and that's the gambler's fallacy. Yeah, you stake all of your winnings on the fact because you think that it's got to come up.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it hasn't done for a while, so it must be you.
Yeah. But and it isn't. It always returns to zero. Yeah. Yeah. Don't take gambling advice from us. Just it's not ever more likely.
It's always 50-50.
It's always 50-50. Yeah.
Well,
unless you're
it's 50-50 in very specific circumstances.
Yes, exactly.
Such as, playing roulette, such as a coin. Sometimes it isn't, no.
Yeah.
Or if you're playing whether or not you'll get a puncture in the desert, not 50-50.
Not 50-50, no.
No.
That's just, yeah. Yeah, just how it is.
It's dependent on external factors.
Yes, yeah. Not and one of them isn't the law of averages. Yeah.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MIT plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
So our next fallacy is the Iron Man fallacy.
Yeah.
This is episode 120. We talked about this.
Just a long time to get to Iron Man, didn't it? Given that we did Straw Man really early on. Yeah.
And so it is connected to Straw Man because with Straw Man you're pretending that your opponent is saying something they're not saying.
Yeah.
The thing you're choosing for that is an easier to defeat argument. You're putting an easier to defeat argument in their mouth, essentially, so that you can then win the argument. With Steel Man, which isn't a fallacy, and so we haven't talked about that in its own episode, you are giving your opponent's argument the best chance of being correct before you argue against it. You are propping it up and making it as good as it can be. And then if you can still defeat it, it's probably wrong, or there's a better chance that it's wrong, or that they haven't fully thought it through. But you're arguing against the strongest case. Iron Man is where you kind of do that to your own argument, but you're doing it in a fallacious way. So what you're doing is you're actually misrepresenting your own position to make it seem like it's much stronger than it is.
Right.
To make it seem like it's something that could, that really it's it can't was be argued it, against.
Unavoidable. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so our example for this one is from The Good Wife.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody here who thinks Marty is good at his job? Huh? Anybody? Oh, come on. There must be somebody. Madeline.
That's quite a performance, Miss Palmieri.
I admit I can be passionate, but as CEO, I'm responsible.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, it's part of a consulting report we commissioned.
Can you read that paragraph for us, Miss Palmieri?
In addition to restructuring 20% of human resources, significant savings could be realized if a meaningful percentage of labor could be induced to resign rather than being terminated.
If you got people to quit instead of firing them, you'd save money. No severance package, no benefits. Is that it?
It was one strategy that was suggested by the outside consultancy. We didn't follow it.
Did you know that 6 hours after your motivational meeting, Martin Joyce committed suicide?
I did know that.
No further questions.
Ms. Palmieri, your management style, it's a bit confrontational, I think is what you said.
It can be, yes.
In your experience, is that unusual?
No. Times are tough. Employers face severe financial restrictions.
So there's reason for your being confrontational.
Yes. If we don't squeeze every drop of productivity from our employees, we'll be forced to ship their jobs overseas, where labor costs are considerably cheaper.
So you were trying to keep jobs in America?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Will and his firm are working on behalf of the family of a man who committed suicide following being essentially attacked, abused, and berated by his boss.
Yeah.
So she claims that, you know, she was just being, you know, strong in her management style, confrontational. And Lewis Canning, their opponent, played by Michael J. Fox, who's brilliant, is prompting her to suggest that actually all she was doing was looking out for the jobs of her workers. That's the only reason she was behaving in the way she was doing. It's actually she was being a responsible manager who was caring about her workers' jobs, because otherwise, if she didn't make them be as productive as they could be, then they would lose their jobs and the jobs would be outsourced. And that is a harder argument. That's a harder thing to argue.
Yeah.
To say, well, no, you shouldn't make your workers be productive and you should just outsource their jobs. No one wants that. That's not the outcome. You
shouldn't protect them. Yeah.
Yeah. But classing a management style that is so incredibly abusive and confrontational as just looking out for your employees. It's an Iron Man.
It's a bit like, who was it that, you just pull out a name at random and they would have been accused of bullying in the Tory party. I think they all maintained that they were
Suella Braverman.
Who was the guy that was when the evacuation of Afghanistan was going on, he was on a beach somewhere. Them got accused for bullying, accused of bullying, and all of them said it's a robust style and it's about maintaining focus and blah 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 blah, all that kind of stuff. And it's that whole of you're just keeping jobs in America thing is the bottom line that Trump and his lackeys use for the whole of Doge and the whole of tariffs is all about that. They they're increasingly double think named bills are all about doing away with DEI and doing away with trans rights and so forth are all named in such a way they are Iron Manned. Just the names of the bills are Iron Manning the argument.
Very much so.
That they read like a reasonable thing, if only it were true.
Yeah.
So it's
a complicated euphemism.
Yes.
Because that's what, when we were talking about the bills, the names of the executive orders and things like that, is they're euphemistically suggesting that actually they're about things they're not about. That's what they're doing is doing an Iron Man. They are positioning this bill as if it's something that it would be unpatriotic to argue against.
And, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Same with the appeal to loyalty is very similar to that. You know, when someone is making an argument and the response is, why do you hate America? It's
What are you, communist? Yeah.
So exactly. It's all built into the same kind of thing. And it's positioning your argument in a way that if someone argues against your new version of your argument, they look like the bad guy. That's the key. You're turning it into a situation where you're clearly, you just want the best for everything, and how can that be argued against? And it's sometimes connected to what's actually happening. Like in this case, it's, you know, it is probably not 100% untrue that is a pressure that this CEO is under to get the most productivity out of her workers. And part of the reason for that is because otherwise it makes more sense to outsource them. It's probably not completely not true, but suggesting that makes it okay in some way to treat them in a way that causes something as horrendous as that is ignoring lots of other factors.
Yeah.
And perhaps, and also it's in a way, it's either a false dichotomy or a kind of Nirvana fallacy of suggesting that there aren't, it's ignoring the possibility that there are other ways to get that productiveness out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that confrontational management style isn't necessarily the only way to get sufficient productivity out of your workers to not outsource their jobs. There are carrots as well as sticks that you could use.
Yes.
And so suggesting, well, this is, you know, this is my only option. If I don't do this, we'll have to send their jobs to the Philippines. Or
Yeah. So therefore, I'm perfectly justified in doing, you know, which in some ways, some people might assume that led to this man's suicide. But all I was doing was,
And who can say that's a bad thing?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So for our next one, we actually have a Trump example. Most of these have been fallacies in the wild, which is always a bit more fun in these times when we don't have to think about Trump all the time. But no, we're back. This is another Trump.
Yeah. Oh, no. So,
So this is episode 127, Whataboutism. And this is a kind of similar to Tu Quoque. Tu Quoque specifically is accusing the person that you're talking to usually of doing the same thing that they are accusing you of. It's a hypocrisy type thing.
Being just as bloody worse.
Whataboutism is more of a distraction tactic of saying, oh, look over there. Those people are also doing a bad thing. And so therefore, you know, why are we talking about the thing I've been accused of when there are other people doing
so many other people?
And so this was when Trump was being questioned about the hush money payments that he paid to Stormy Daniels during his campaign.
Nobody except for me would be looked at like this. Nobody. What about Congress, where they have a slush fund and millions of dollars is paid out each year? They have a slush fund. Millions. They don't talk about campaign finance or anything. Have you ever heard of campaign finance lists? Have they listed that on their campaign finance sheets? No.
So, I mean, that's literally, he says, what about Congress? He uses the kind of the key phrase that triggers this whataboutism fallacy. And
he's not even smart about that kind of stuff, is he?
No. He doesn't hide it.
He just gets angry just doesn't care.
What we often say with Trump, you may have noticed over the past 170 plus episodes, is that when he says a thing, it usually isn't true, and when it and if it was true, it still wouldn't
prove
be
the argument.
A good argument.
This is
one of those rare cases where the thing he's saying is kind of true.
Wow.
Congress
has
a slush fund
for
paying out money to deal with accusations of sexual harassment by staffers.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
That essentially comes out of the public purse.
Right. Okay.
And it is designed to avoid the work of Congress being interrupted and messed around with by you know, the constant
pesky
accusations of sexual harassment that sexual harassers have to deal with.
Have to deal with, put up with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a fucking insane thing.
Yeah. Yes. Wow.
It is a true thing. And and part of why it's not a good argument for Trump to be making, part of why, is it's a legal thing. It was voted on. It's part of the law that it exists. It's not a thing they get away with. It's a thing they decided to do. Yeah.
Wow.
And the thing that gets that set up and funded was voted on by Congress. I mean, there's nuance to it, but essentially what he's saying is accurate, that's a real thing. And it's not a campaign finance violation by any means.
Right.
It shouldn't exist, in my opinion, but it exists,
no,
it's legal,
but it's,
and
but
it
it's
doesn't
not
fit under the...
It's not violating the other rules.
It's not violating any specific laws. It's a thing. I think it's reasonable to raise at some point. It's not reasonable to raise as part of the argument that people
defense.
Should then ignore, therefore, the stuff you do, the laws you break.
Yes.
And the campaign finance violations you make, and the fact that you paid a porn star to not tell people about the fact that you were sleeping with her while your wife was at home nursing your newborn son.
And not using campaign finances to do that. Yeah. Covering that up. Yeah.
So it's not a valid defense.
No.
But it is
even
a true
if
thing.
It is true, yeah.
It is a true thing that shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go, Trump. Sorry for dragging your pristine name through the mire every time by saying that you tell lies. But this time it's true, but it's
the
no
fact
defense.
Is that even if the slush fund was an illegal thing, if it was like a thing that that six particularly harassy senators had got together and kind of agreed on in Venmo or something, that they would use that whenever something came up, and they specifically were using it while they were campaigning for their jobs again as a way to stop news stories
people
getting out.
Even if
all of those situations were true,
it's
still wouldn't
not
mean that Trump shouldn't be held to account when he breaks the law.
Yep.
But, you know, credit to him. It's rare that we come up with an example where the thing he said wasn't completely
not
true.
Actually exists.
So, the next one is episode 131, Countless Counterfeits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is...
Great example, this one.
This is... this is when someone basically points to the volume of evidence, even though the evidence itself is bad, is low quality, or doesn't actually prove the thing you're trying to prove, or is entirely made up, or whatever.
Didn't we talk about the amount of cases that Rudy Giuliani and his lot brought on the basis,
I think
they all got dismissed, but they said, but look how many we've brought.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Even though the judge just went, yeah, but they're all shit.
They're all shit. You can have every single one of them. Yeah.
62 barrels of shit doesn't make it any less shit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is essentially this fallacy, is it doesn't matter how much bad evidence you have. Doesn't turn it into good evidence.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Fundamentally,
it's not even that. Yeah. That's a totally separate fallacy. But
but two rights, yeah,
multiple
two rights
barrels
make
of shit don't make a don't make a barrel of peaches.
As the saying goes,
yeah. That's a generally accepted phrase, isn't it? I think so. Yes, this. Incident is from Disney's Anastasia. Anastasia is hoping that good things are going to come in her future.
Somewhere down this road, I know someone's waiting. Years of dreams just can't be wrong.
Yes, they can.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times how many you've dreams. Dreamed of good things happening to you.
Yeah. Yeah,
or even a specific good thing.
Yeah,
doesn't make it any more likely to actually happen.
sorry, Disney fans. Yeah, which has ruined the whole thing. Yeah. All that. Oh, I watched today the alternative ending for Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah. Give it away.
Oh, all right. it came out on DVD.
No, I haven't
six
seen,
years ago.
I've only seen series one of Breaking Bad. So
but you keep saying you're going to work your way through the whole 10 series.
I've been busy.
This year's a reading year, isn't it?
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
Not a watching year.
It's not,
okay.
It's not my TV year till next year.
Yeah.
And that's assuming I don't get a PS5. Because tomorrow might be my gaming year. Next year might be my gaming year.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. It involves, it's a Malcolm in the Middle crossover and a dream sequence.
Oh, I'm aware of, I'm aware of the existence of that. Yes.
Very, very,
it's a,
very
it's a
good
Bob
indeed.
Newhart type ending, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of Dallas. Yeah. The whole of, yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah. Very funny.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know how that all came up because of Anastasia. I understand how.
I have dreams. Not enough. Yes, too many dreams. Yep.
Enough said.
Yeah.
So the final fallacy that I think we'll discuss this time round is sour grapes.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And this obviously comes from the Aesop's fable of the fox.
Yeah.
That couldn't reach the grapes and then decided, nah, I don't really want those grapes anyway. They're probably rubbish grapes.
Yeah.
Probably not even good.
Yeah,
and,
which is why foxes don't generally eat grapes anymore.
Yeah, you hardly ever see a fox eating grapes these days.
Much easier to turn over a bin.
From the fable.
Yeah.
And so, this is basically when someone doesn't get the outcome they want and rationalizes it in the idea that they actually didn't want it in the first place or that it's better that they didn't have it.
Yeah.
So our first example for this one is Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah.
This is from the series, is it series four?
Mm-hmm.
Three or four, where Paul Rudd is playing Ben Glenroy, the actor, and his brother Dickie has been his manager for his whole career, basically, and he treats him like shit.
Right.
And Dickie has decided that he's going to resign and doesn't want to be his manager anymore.
Right.
And Ben finds out by reading a note.
Wait, what is this? Are you quitting?
I was going to wait till after the show.
She put you up to this. Did she know fucking Loretta? She's been driving a wedge between us from day one.
It's not Loretta, it's you. I've spent my entire life catering to the great Ben Glenroy, who we all know isn't exactly a delight to be around. See bullet point four.
Oh, yeah, fine. All right, fine. Go ahead. Fuck if I care. You're a lousy manager anyway. And you know, and you're an even lousier brother.
Yeah. So
there you
he's,
go. Yeah.
he's not a bad manager or a bad brother. He's done everything possible for Ben, but That's his it's a kind of it's a defense mechanism. It's a way of dealing of, well, not having to deal with your feelings about it, really, by rejecting the idea that it could make you sad.
Or facing the truth that is being presented to you.
Yeah.
That, yeah. No, it is.
That in this case, it's something you've done that has caused this situation.
Yeah.
And in a very kind of connected but different way, the other example that we have for this is probably the most emotional scene in a sitcom of all time. This is The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and this is the episode where Will's dad, his long estranged dad, comes back, and he tries to kind of have a relationship with him, tries to be reconcile with him, and tells him that he's going to take him on a road trip. He's a trucker, and he's got this big job. He's going to go across America, and he wants Will to come with him. Mm-hmm. And Will is prepared to accept him back in his life and is annoyed at other people, like Uncle Phil, for example, questioning his dad and questioning whether he is actually, whether he's turned over a new leaf and all of that. And this scene stops before it gets super emotional in my example stops. But the rest of the scene, I don't think it's possible to watch this scene without crying. I just I've never done it. I don't think it's possible for a human to do it.
Yeah, but I think it's to do with Uncle Phil's response.
Phil. Yeah, he's the dad that Will always needed.
And there's and as it kind of proceeds, there's the bit where there's that acknowledgement that he is, and kind of Phil holds on, and
and this comes after an episode where he has been pushing him away, and in fact, yelled at him earlier on in the episode, "You're not my real dad," basically. You can't tell me what to do, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that comes full circle, and it's it's emotional. Anyway, this bit is just the start of him dealing with his ultimate rejection by his dad.
Yeah.
Some business came up I got to handle. So we're going to have to put our trip on hold. You understand?
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Just for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm, I understand. Yeah.
Maybe a little longer.
Yeah, whatever.
Look, I'll call you next week and we'll iron out the details, okay?
Yeah.
It was great seeing you, son.
You too, Lou.
I'm
sorry, Will.
You know what? Actually, this works out better for me. You know, the slimmies of summer come to class wearing next to nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Will, it's all right to be angry.
Hey, why should I be mad? I'm saying, at least he said goodbye this time.
So, suggestion that actually it's better not to be going on a road trip with my dad this summer because you know there's attractive people in very few clothes around, and so putting a positive spin on it, suggesting actually that you're not devastated by the thing that's happening, and
I love that moment when he says
it in that way,
when he says good to see you, son, and he says good to see you too, Lou.
That's nice. a killer line.
And
then I'm welling up right now because I know what happens next. If you haven't seen this, like, search Fresh Prince of Bel-Air emotional scene or something like that on YouTube. It's devastating, and it's
not just the other annoying guy getting slammed into a locker.
No.
It will come up with this.
So that's a great place to end it, I think, because I'm sad now.
That was the moment. Who was it who said that? Oh, it was Jimmy Carr. Have we had this conversation where Jimmy Carr said, "Yeah, the thing about Will Smith, turns out he's a brilliant actor. For 30 years, he's convinced us he's a really nice guy. Turns out he's not. Turns out he's a complete arsehole. Yeah, yeah. Well, this was the one moment when actually you think, oh, yeah. He was a bad actor.
He's good. Yeah. He is a good actor. But,
Also,
it's, there's, I mean, anger issues. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't think his career is probably over. I don't know. I don't think he'll probably get nominated for an Oscar again.
No.
But he'll be back.
Or even allowed into the room.
No, he's not. Right. He's not. He's definitely banned from that room.
He has to sit it out.
That's it for this time. But we have got more examples queued up for more of these. And hopefully you'll join us for those.
Yep.
In the meantime,
over the course of 134 episodes, you've come across any examples that we ought to have identified and played in, let us know.
By all means, absolutely.
Send us a link and we'll be interested to play them in. Or if anything's happened in your personal life, let's go, oh, yeah, I've actually done that all the time, especially the gambler's fallacy.
Why?
That's right. Has it ever? Oh, I don't know. I'm seeking some advice. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that going to, this time, if I pump the airbed up at the camping trip, just that one little bit more? No, I'm not going to do it because it's bound to burst.
There's always a puncture.
It's going to happen. It's always to do every with time. Air, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Fitting too many things, too much stuff into a small volume. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening. Again. See you again next time.
See you the next one. Yeah. Bye. Bye.